Hi, you're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Church. For more information, head to our website, www.lmc.org.au.
Thank you very much for having me here today. It's such a pleasure to come and meet you all and see what an amazing church and school and facilities you have here. I'm overwhelmed by what's being accomplished. And as Graham says, it's not a very uplifting message that I have today, but it's important. So I work for the Australian Christian Lobby, and I've worked there for 2 years. And one of the things that they said when I first arrived was, hey, do you want to have a look at this Safe Schools program? So I thought, oh, yeah, you know, game for anything. So I had a look at the Safe Schools program, and it really showed me a different worldview. And this is something that we don't often explore, because you'll hear very strident views in the media about how we must think a certain way, we must respond compassionately to vulnerable people. And of course, that we all have compassionate hearts, and we all want to do that. So what I want to look at today is to really put aside the victims, because I actually think that they're being used as a human shield for a very nasty political agenda that doesn't care about their own good. So just go with me for a while and I'll explain why I think what I think. So I want to put the victims that are so prominent in the press aside and look instead at the motivations of the activists behind this political movement and their worldview, their anthropology, which is what they believe about the nature of man, and therefore what they think we ought to do with society, what a great social revolution looks like. And they do use the word revolution, whether that means the Marxist revolution that they're bringing in, the new utopia where we're all liberated. Some of them certainly conceive it in that way, whether it's the culmination of the sexual revolution or whether it's a combination of the two. So I want to look at what the revolutionaries think, and first of all, to understand the something of their point of view of how the world is at the moment. Where do I direct this? Where do I?
Anywhere.
Oh, okay. So what we're looking at is the new normal. There are some things that we think don't change about the world, but they are, and things that we've always taken for granted, but we need to understand that they want to change these things. So we're going to look at, has anyone heard of the word heteronormativity? Yes, great. Not many, actually. Show of hands, a few people have heard the word heteronormativity. More and more people are hearing the word heteronormativity, but for those that haven't, I'm just going to explain what it means. Heteronormativity is a set of assumptions. This is according to the activists' worldview. It's a set of assumptions that says that babies with male bodies are boys and babies with female bodies are girls, and that boys will grow up to identify as men and girls will grow up to identify as women. And in the absence of any other information, you can probably assume that they'll fancy each other, get married and have children. Now, we might think of this as the social expression of a biological principle of reproduction, which is why it is cross-cultural and ahistorical. Without this set of assumptions, humanity would probably not be where it is today, and certainly not as numerous. However, according to their point of view, this is just a set of assumptions. The world could be arranged in any way, but because we've decided that these things are normal, we therefore prioritise them. We say, these are good. These are good things. And that means that the people that don't fit into those boxes or those categories then feel that they are less good. So heteronormativity, rather than just being premised on biological reality, is now an instrument of oppression for LGBT people. It's really important that we get this on board, because if heterosexuality and gender congruence are normal, then what we are saying is LGBT people are different, they're less normal and therefore less good. And language gets manipulated to express this worldview. So they use words differently. Oscar Wilde said that America and England were two nations divided by a common language, and I think that Australia is being divided by a common language. So there are some words that we need to understand that they, when they use them, they mean something different. So they use the word inclusion and diversity. We'll just look at inclusion. Inclusion for us means we're not excluding people, we're not being nasty to people, we want inclusion for everybody. But for them, heteronormativity is inherently exclusive. If you say that this is good, you're saying LGBT is less good or bad. So in order to have inclusivity in the narrative of the activists, we need to get rid of heteronormativity. We can't have that. So Ros Ward, who is the author of the Safe Schools program, says that, you know, when we get rid of heteronormativity, we will have liberated our minds and bodies in ways that we can only imagine. We can only try to imagine. We can't even imagine them, but it's going to be glorious. So this grand future that she envisages, well, we don't even really have a word for it. So our side of the debate doesn't often get to dictate the language, and I've invented a word. So I'm calling it queer normativity. So if you don't have heteronormativity, what have you got instead? You've got the normalisation of sexual and gender diversity. So they think this is a good thing. This is the world that we ought to be working towards. And this is going to be the new normal. So when being queer is normal, then they won't feel excluded anymore. They'll feel included. So at the root of this is a new anthropology, a new way of conceiving the human person. And I'm going to use some school resources to teach you about it because they've created the resources. Let's use them. This is being used in Australian schools and internationally as well. It keeps being updated. This is version 3.3, and I think there is a subsequent version as well. But it pictures a person in which gender identity, which is how you feel in your brain, you might be male or female, and your gender expression, which is how you choose to express that in terms of your hairstyle or your dress sense, and your biological sex, and who you're attracted to romantically and sexually. Well, these are all independent variables. You might have a person who is made up of any different combination of these things. So throw out the binaries. We're not allowed to think of male and female anymore. That's just silly. Everyone's on a spectrum. And if you can just work out which gender identity you have and how you want to express that and that everybody's different, then we will have arrived at, you know, utopia where we've got the new vision of the human person. This has already been outdated because, well, looks like a man, doesn't it? It's a gingerbread man, let's be honest. So it's supporting the patriarchy. We need to get rid of that. So instead of that, we now have the gender unicorn. This is how we're supposed to conceive of the human person. We have gender identity, gender expression, sex assigned at birth, because it's not biological anymore. It's a kind of, you know, it's just what society's decided that you are. And it can be anywhere, male, female, or intersex or other. So again, that's variable. Who you're physically attracted to and who you're emotionally attracted to. These are all on a spectrum. None of them is binary. So there's infinite number of combinations that are possible. So in this way, if you believe that this is true about the human person, then you'll end up with quite a different anthropology of you know, who the human person is. We're all queer, we're all trans, we're all LGBT in one way or another. So this is being taught in schools. Oh, sorry, this is from America. This is a great quote. Ryan Anderson came to Australia recently for the ACL, and this is a quote from America. From a medical perspective, the appropriate determinant of sex is gender identity. It is counter to medical science to use chromosomes, hormones, internal reproductive organs, external genitalia, or secondary sex characteristics to override gender identity for purposes of classifying someone as male or female. So one of the problems that we have in talking about this publicly is that we sound silly, and it's because these ideas are pretty silly. It's counter to medical science now to look at biology. Biology is irrelevant to whether or not you are a man or a woman. All that matters is your gender identity that's in your head. And although most people that actually changed the law to in 2013 weren't aware of this, we now have this enshrined in Australian law, this new anthropology of who a person is and that whether you're male or female is dissociated from biology, nothing to do with biology. This is now in fact, enshrined in Australian law at Commonwealth level in the Sex Discrimination Act, which removed the terms man and woman and replaced them instead with gender identity. So this is who you are now. Your gender identity and your sexual orientation determine who you are, not whether you're a man or a woman, because that's irrelevant. And this is being used now to change other laws. Oh, we've got to be consistent with the Commonwealth law because it says that biology doesn't matter. Now, some of the feminists disagree with this. They think, especially the lesbians, they say, well, actually having a female body is quite important and we don't want men who dress up as women to come into our safe spaces. So the T and the L in the LGBT movement are at odds with each other. So there are lots of different reasons for disagreeing with this, but this is now Australian law. This is how it's being taught in schools. So from children as young as four are being taught with this book, The Gender Fairy. This is recommended by the Children's Dysphoria Clinic in Melbourne here. So if parents are wondering, oh my goodness, what's this new concept of gender? They're referred to this as a resource. And what this says, this is a book written for children. Only you know whether you're a boy or a girl. No one can tell you. This book has caused problems because children who have been read this book in school then come back thinking, the gender fairy is going to visit in the night and turn me into a boy. I don't want to be a boy. So, you know, it's causing quite a lot of distress. But anyway, it's important that we teach all kids, even at preschool level, that we're all trans and being different is all completely normal. So queer normativity again. This is a snapshot from the Safe Schools program, which explains gender identity. And I'm just going to be talking about gender identity today, not the LGB part of the acronym, just the transgender part, really. Gender isn't quite as simple as whether you're male or female. Everyone has their own gender identity in relation to masculinity and femininity. Some identify with both, some don't identify with either. It's up to the individual to describe what gender identity fits them best. This is from the All of Us lesson plans, and they really regretted writing this program because, of course, we could look at it and say, this is what they're teaching kids in school. And before that, they could go, no, it's an anti-bullying program. It's just an anti-bullying program. But we could look at this and show that they were really teaching a very different idea of the human person and gender to children in schools. There's all sorts of ways that this is being normalised in culture. We have drag queen story time for kids at the library. I like that heading. What in the name of Captain Kangaroo is going on? That's from America. But I understand it happened in Wollongong Library recently. It's happening in the UK. And, of course, for children, this is a bit like, you know, going to see a clown, isn't it? That guy there with the hairy arms and the florals, he's a kindergarten teacher in real life. And then we're celebrating transgenderism in schools. So a lot of these are taken from the Minus 18 materials that were produced for Safe Schools. Playing with your look, there's a girl there who's binding her chest so that she can look like a boy. Nevo in the middle there is a girl who now identifies as a boy. So there's also, but it's all completely normal, and this is being pushed through schools, but not just through schools. It's also being pushed through the media to children. So I've just got a bunch of screen grabs here from, you know, they're not particularly radical publications. Most of these are Teen Vogue, things like that. So they're not fringe. They're you know, the sorts of things that teenagers are regularly looking at. And it's celebrating androgyny or transvestitism, but the queer look as well. So this is all very normal. Heteronormativity is a bad thing. So those of you who thought that you were fine, forget it. So these are the messages that young people are being given. You know, your old-fashioned ideas, it's not just that they're wrong, it's that they're actually harmful to LGBT people, so you need to get rid of them. Don't bother reading all the... we won't have time to read it all. Survey says that young people don't identify as straight. So you see, the young people are getting this message. You might not be straight, you might not be queer. What are you? Let's question your identity. Everybody else is doing it. It's all perfectly normal. Here are lots of reasons to change your name, and one of them, of course, is that you've discovered that you weren't the person that your parents said you were, that you have a different gender identity to the sex that you were assigned at birth. Okay, so that's how it's being promoted to children, and this is how we need to consider gender now, because postmodernism doesn't like to deal with binaries. We thought that there was male and female, and then we thought, well, maybe not. Maybe we can just... maybe people are different combinations. Maybe someone's a man in their... a woman in their head and a man in their body, or the other way around. Maybe bits of you can... you know, there's a different way of conceiving it here, which is somewhere on the spectrum between male and female. But then you've got a bunch of people saying, picture a spectrum between male and female, and I'm kind of in the middle but off to the side at about an inch. Well, what is that? So that's a whole new concept of gender, and it's mushrooming out in all sorts of different ways, and now we're being told that gender looks like this. So gender looks like how you feel, what you're interested in, whether you feel male and female, whether you feel bouncy or fragile or happy or whatever. These are essentially different feelings. So here's an example. I'm going to have to read it. It says, this is written to Tumblr website, which is like the oracle of gender, to which young people can, you know, humbly subscribe, can you tell me what my gender is and help me work it out. So what Tumblr say is, this person's written in saying, help, I need some help. My gender feels like something big and untamed, like a wild horse. Is there any gender that fits? And what would be some nice pronouns? I was thinking about wild, 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 wild self, or whore self. And what? But would that sound too silly? Yes, it would. Thank you for your help. Anyway, and then the Tumblr helpfully writes back and says, well, yeah, I'm not sure, but I've found a few. Okay, we've got athergender, which is a gender that feels very wide, commanding, breathtaking, and powerful, and it can be combined with other relevant genders. Or we've got gigagender, which is a great big gender that is an undeniable and large and powerful. There's Jupiter gender, Macro gender, Saturn gender. And on it goes. Here are some funny ones that amused me. Apogender, which is a subset of gender in which you feel not only genderless, but entirely removed from the concept of gender. There's glass gender, which is a gender that is very sensitive and fragile. And glimmer gender, a faintly shining, wavering gender. And if we skip down to the bottom, there's apogender, which feels apathy towards one's gender that causes one to have no desire to look into it further. And I think I'm with them. So when I was first reading these, I was thinking, oh, come on, you silly, self-indulgent teenagers, get over yourselves and get a job. It's all a bit introspective and self-indulgent, but after a while, I was listening to what these kids were writing in and how Tumblr was responding. Oh, sorry, these are the pronouns that go with all the different genders. Don't even bother looking because, you know, there's no way we're going to remember any of that. As I was reading through the responses from Tumblr to these kids, what they were saying was, you know, Summer would write in and say, hi, my name's Summer, and I think I identify with Zur and Zay pronouns, but can you try a few sentences out just so I can try them on and see if they fit? And Tumblr would write back saying, Summer's taste in music is great, Zur has fabulous dress sense, tra-la-la. And but all through these, you would get this ending, this sentence saying, Zur needs to know that Zur is valid. Valid. You're valid. You need to know that you're valid. And this was the message that was coming out to these kids. And after a while, I was thinking, gosh, these poor little bunnies, they're sort of stretching upwards desperately at validity. What a empty, vacuous, horrible place to be in where you think you're not valid. I was thinking, valid is such an empty thing. What about precious and special and unique and wonderful and purposed for good and loved by God? What about all of those things? We're not even... And then I realised that this is a generation that doesn't know that and has not been told how special they are. Which is sad. So then I felt sorry for them, poor little things. But on the other hand, it's a great opportunity for us to go and tell them who they are in God, which is really what they want to know. The effect of all of this, by the way, and then it made me realise that if you thought, everything that's special and unique and precious and wonderful about me, I can pour that, if I just find out what a gender is, what gender I am, that will encapsulate that quintessential, essential me that's so precious. That's what I need to find. I need to find my gender, I need to find my pronouns, and then I need to get people to use my pronouns. And so effectively what you're doing is you're handing somebody else the power to validate your identity or not. So really, if you felt that your identity was poured into this gender and then someone failed to use your pronouns, you'd feel that you were annihilated. Really, all it's doing is funneling kids down a blind alley where they can be shot really easily, where they can be pummeled by people, even accidentally making a mistake and using the wrong pronouns. It's so sad. No one should be obliged to hand over to the public the responsibility for affirming their gender identity and you know, annihilating them and really hurting them if they don't do that. So I actually think it's not helping kids to encourage them into thinking of themselves in this way. There are a lot of different things that come under the umbrella term of transgender. Transgenderism, so there's transvestitism, there's gender dysphoria, there's different types of gender dysphoria. There's adult transgenderism, which typically sees adult men transition to live as women. Now, some of those adult men say, I always knew that I was a woman, really, and I liked to dress up in clothes, in girls' clothes when I was little. In some cases, there's mental... diagnosable mental illness involved, one of which is called autogynephilia, which is a very strange thing, but it's Bruce Jenner is an example of someone who has autogynephilia. Gynephilia is an erotic response to women in general. Autogynephilia is when you really fancy yourself as a woman. So Bruce Jenner doesn't want to be a woman, he wants to be a hot babe of a woman, because he fancies himself as a woman. So this is a recognised mental illness, but now it comes under the umbrella of transgenderism. And then we have childhood gender dysphoria, which is what I'll talk about for the next little bit. Childhood gender dysphoria is a feeling of unease recognized in very small children. I don't feel like a boy. I want to be called a different name. Now, it used to be taken as a sign of sexual abuse. The first thing that you would ask was, why doesn't Johnny want to be Johnny? It's a dissociative disorder. I'm not happy being me. I want to be somebody else. Well, why would that be? And there's all sorts of reasons why that might be. There's a video on YouTube at the moment, Michelle Critella, who is the president of the American College of Pediatricians, who are on our side of this debate. And she has an example that she gives of a child she was dealing with who was 4 years old, and she would observe him playing on the mat, and he would be playing with trucks, and then he'd look at his parents watching him, and he'd put that down and he'd pick up Barbie dolls and things like this. And on investigation, they found out that this little boy had a little sister, a baby who was born with special needs. She was disabled, and so her parents needed to spend a lot of time and attention caring for that little girl. This little boy, in his four-year-old mind, believed that they loved girls more than they loved him, and that if he was a girl, they would love him more. So he was determined to be a girl. So once you unravel that, you can get to the bottom of it, and of course, he's not transgender. There's a reason for it. There's normally a reason. There was a clinician in Canada who's been treating children for childhood gender dysphoria for the last 30 years. He has a very good success rate of reorienting children to their biological sex, which you would think would be a good thing. If you really cared about children, that's good news, isn't it? He had over 85% of his gender dysphoric children were happy with their biological sex by the time he'd finished with them. They closed him down. And I'll tell you in a minute about how if you think that this is a compassionate agenda that wants the best for children, it's absolutely not. What this wants is children to validate a worldview that says that being queer is normal. And Zucker's results were not consistent with supporting this worldview. And we now have policies in schools which support the opposite. They're designed to cement children in gender dysphoric identity for as long as possible and through puberty if possible. Puberty is another part of development that normally reorients people to their natal gender. So now what we do is we block puberty and then we give them cross-sex hormones and surgery in the end as well. So there's a pathway of medical transitioning, but it begins with social transitioning. And if you go along to any of the gender dysphoria clinics, you'll be told the only thing to do is to affirm your child, your little Johnny, is actually a girl and you never realised it, and the only thing for you to do is to acknowledge that and to transition little Johnny. This is not a new slide, but you can see that the instance of childhood gender dysphoria is going up. Now, the advocates would say, well, this is a good thing because these kids were always there and we just never realised it. Now we're acknowledging it and we're able to bring them out. They feel more comfortable being who they really are, so we can treat them. This is climbing up and up and up every year. There are 50 new patients every week in the UK now for presenting for dysphoria. That's childhood. Now we have another new kid on the block called rapid onset gender dysphoria. This is particularly afflicts teenage girls who had no sign of gender dysphoria in childhood, but suddenly in puberty decide that they are a boy. And Dr. Michael Bailey from Northwestern University, who's been studying this, 10 years ago this didn't exist, it's a new phenomenon. Preliminary research indicates that young people who identify as trans out of the blue may have been influenced by social media sites that valorise being trans. In addition, researchers have observed a pattern of clusters of friends coming out together. So what we saw in the media before, you might be trans, it's really cool to be trans, hey, this person's a hero because they're trans, is having an effect on kids, and these behaviours are appearing out of nowhere in response to the idea that this might be a good way to get attention, popularity, to show how unique and funky and cool you are if you're a teenager. Now, in a lot of cases, there are adult women who are then detransitioning, and they don't get celebrated in the media. If you know to type in transgender regret or detransitioning on YouTube, you'll get 40,000 hits, typically young women saying, don't go near the gender experts because they will tell you that you're gender dysphoric, they'll give you hormones and a mastectomy. Actually, I was a lesbian and I didn't realise it, or I was having some issues with my mother, I didn't want to be like her, or I didn't feel that I was a very good woman. I wasn't pretty and skinny and compliant, so I thought maybe I'd make a better man. You know, all of these sorts of ideas that, you know, teenage rebellion, you know, recognises as, you know, been going on for centuries, but suddenly adolescence has become a lot more dangerous for those girls because of the Advocates for Transitioning. We've got Dr. Elizabeth Riley, who she was treating adult transgender people who felt that they always knew. So she did a PhD on the needs of gender non-conforming children, and now advises parents and schools on the best way to go about transitioning children. And she says this: until society can accept that some boys are born with vaginas and some girls are born with penises, we're always going to have this problem about how children see themselves and what they have to do in order to be accepted. So as far as she's concerned, there was a mix-up at HQ. This boy was put onto a girl's body and the girl was put into a boy's body. And until we realise that and make them comfortable, then we're not doing them a service. And Ros Ward, I'll just skip to the end of this, but this is a quote from a speech that she gave recently, which shows that Safe Schools was going into schools and transitioning children without asking any questions about why they might be feeling that way. So thinking of the stories that I was telling you earlier, the little boy who thought that he'd be more loved if he was a girl, then you would think, let's ask some questions. Let's have some medical intervention. Let's get a psychologist to look at this. Surely there'd be some sort of safeguards. But no, this child just needs to say, I feel a bit strange this week. And Ros Ward will come in and say, we don't need to hear your full life story. We just want to know that we just want to know how you want school to be, and we're going to try to make that happen. In order for you to believe that this is really in a child's best interest, you have to believe that gender identity is never wrong, and it's always a fixed property, and that that child will still identify that way in adulthood. Now, none of the evidence says that that's true, but it certainly does suit the political agenda, the worldview, this glorious revolution that Ros Ward wants to usher in, where we're all liberated from our minds and bodies in ways we can't even imagine. She wrote this document, which is housed at the Federal Education Hub. If a student does not have family or carer support for the process of transitioning in schools, then a decision to proceed should be made based on the school's duty of care for the student's well-being and their level of maturity to make decisions about their needs. It may be possible to consider a student a mature minor and able to make decisions without parental consent. In South Australia, the Education Department has this policy. If the parent or guardian objects, then the site leader, the principal, will need to make a decision about what is in the best interests of the child, because the principal will know that. And failure to accede to a request to change a child's first name to align with the child's gender identity may breach the Sex Discrimination Act and Equal Opportunity Act. So any principal that doesn't want to get in trouble is going to do it. In fact, really, you just affirm any gender identity other than the one suggested by biological sex, and you'll probably be safe. Victoria has this. There may be circumstances in which students wish or need to undertake gender transition without the consent of their parents or carers and without consulting medical practitioners. It will be necessary for the school to consider whether the student is a mature minor. No doctors, no teachers, no parents are allowed to get in the way of the self-declared, of the affirmation of the self-declared identity of this poor little mite who might have some other reason for wanting to be that way. New South Wales says that on rare occasions, a parent's or carer's response to a student identifying as being trans could give rise to a reasonable suspicion that the student is at suspected risk of harm. It could relate to the parent's stated response to their child identifying as trans, like, don't be silly, you're a boy. Well, that's the wrong response, and school staff should inform their principal of any concerns about a student who may be at suspected risk of harm. So they're told to consider their mandatory reporting obligations, which means that parents who don't affirm a transgender identity are suspected of being abusive. That's not new. That's a few years old. I suspect that they would phrase it more strongly now. This is something that's happening at the moment. We don't want doctors to be able to stop children transitioning either. So there was the submission date for this, it came up, it's very badly publicised on the website of the Australian Health Practitioners Regulatory Authority. This is the authority that governs what doctors can and cannot do when they're guilty of malpractice. And they've written a document called Good Medical Practice, a Code of Conduct for Doctors in Australia. Now, they've made some changes to it and they wanted people to comment on the changes by last Friday. They have now extended the deadline. But one of the items that gave rise to some concern from doctors was this one. Community trust in the medical profession is essential. Every doctor has a responsibility to behave ethically and justify this trust. The boundary between a doctor's personal and public profile can be blurred. As a doctor, you need to acknowledge and consider the effect of your comments and actions outside work, including online, or your professional standing, on your professional standing and on the reputation of the profession. If making public comment, you should acknowledge the profession's general accepted views, because how many thousand doctors do we have in Australia? They've all got general accepted views that we know what they are, yes? And then you should indicate where your personal opinion differs. Behaviour which could undermine community trust in the profession is at odds with good medical practice and may be considered unprofessional. So if you think about this in real life situations, we had Dr. Pansy Lai, who spoke up for traditional marriage in the same-sex marriage campaign last year, and there was a petition against her on change.org. Can we please get this person deregistered because she's saying things that are harmful to LGBT people? In fact, there was no authority for them to do that. They said, no, sorry, she's allowed to say what she likes. There's no reason for us to get rid of her, to revoke her medical license, effectively. We've had Dr. Don Whitehall, who did a tour with me on safe schools last year for the ACL, talking about the effects on brains and bodies of hormonal treatments and sex reassignment surgery. And he had a letter to the university questioning his whether or not he should really be doing that, questioning his appointment at the university. Should this guy who you're teaching really be speaking publicly about these things? We have Dr. David Van Gend, who's a GP, who similarly wrote a very reasonable book in support of marriage, traditional marriage, and he is currently before a review board. So there are, we know that the activists would like some sort of mechanism to punish doctors who disagree with the prevailing wisdom of queer normativity, and here we have the instruments to be able to revoke their licenses, call them bad doctors, and say they're damaging and abusive. So this new code would prevent doctors from speaking plainly on matters that challenge their conscience, euthanasia, late-term abortions, childhood gender dysphoria, the legalisation of marijuana, the outcome for children adopted by same-sex parents. These are all politically very sensitive areas on which the medical profession ought to be able to comment freely in their professional capacity. It also limits the freedom of speech of doctors. Suddenly, because you're a doctor, if you want to keep your licence, you should be very careful about what you say publicly. So we have a lot of doctors concerned about that. And the other problem is, what does abuse look like? Because in the olden days, when boys were boys and girls were girls, it was very clear when these things were being abused. And sometimes these desires for a child to be the opposite gender come from the parent, not from the child. And here's a case only a few years ago, 2016, where the a court in England decided to remove a child from his parents were separated, to remove the child from his mother's custody because the father could prove that she was affirming the child in a cross-gender identity against the child's wishes. She wanted him to be a girl, and so she was dressing him as a girl. And this is a problem, it's called Van Munchausen's by proxy, where parents impose their own wishes on their child. I know of one family who had five little boys, and they desperately wanted a girl, had another child, and the sixth one was a boy, but that was okay because he was transgender. Now, normally, you would say, something fishy going on there, really? But you're not allowed to do that anymore because of this nonsense. So what does abuse look like? We can't really spot it anymore. Here's an example of Lactatia. Now, Lactatia was spotted in the Toronto Mardi Gras last year twerking. So this little picture in the bottom corner here is part of a video, highly sexualized dance. I showed that to a friend of mine who's completely on board with queer normativity, and even she said that kid needs to be reported to docs. However, Lactatia is now a drag queen. That's her mother, his mother. And here he is pictured with some fans. No, that's all fine. No, we're not allowed to look and think that there's anything odd going on there. And so we come to a dialogue about conversion therapy. So conversion therapy traditionally referred to some very brutal, nasty practices designed to switch some, you know, discourage same-sex attraction. The UN has said some very stern things against it, and rightly so, because some of the treatments involved electric shock therapy, they were involuntary, they were really brutal. Nobody's in favour of conversion therapy. But now the language is being manipulated again so that conversion therapy Well, it depends on what you believe is the starting point. What is the true identity of a person, whether you're trying to convert them or not? So now, if you try to affirm, reorient somebody with their natal sex, well, that's conversion therapy. And that conversion therapy might just include a conversation, it might include counselling, it might include pastoral advice, it might include asking the question, why are you not happy being a boy? That's all conversion therapy, and it's abusive. So we've got to stop conversion therapy. And it refers to sexual orientation as well, but we're seeing these messages, this is again from March 2018, oh, we've got to stop these freaky Christian groups that are concerned with conversion therapy, that they think heterosexuality is normal. Well, that's a problem because they're imposing that on people and that's causing unhappiness for those people. Homophobic, transphobic parents make abusive homes. Let's keep LGBT kids out. Now, the problem is that abusive homes mean parents that don't say, welcome, I never realised I had a daughter. I thought I had a son, but this is great. So unless that's your initial response, even if your response is, can we just wait till after puberty and we'll work this out? Well, that's abusive because you're not affirming the true gender identity of this child, which we know has nothing to do with their biology. So when they say abusive homes or abusive parents, we need to understand that what they mean is typical parents, typical homes. And here's what Benjamin Law says he wrote a book about safe schools, Moral Panic 101. It didn't really make much of a splash on the headlines because, unhappily for him, in the same week, his other Twitter comments broke national news, what he thought he might do to encourage our federal MPs to like the same-sex marriage debate. So anyway, this was lost, but this is what he says. Here's an uncomfortable reality. Parents don't always know best. He doesn't have any kids of his own, by the way, just to let you know. Family life can be awful for a homosexual child too. Youth who come out meet with parental grief, confusion, denial, or rage so hot that for everyone involved, the prospect of a child eating out of a dumpster or sleeping under bridges is preferable to coexisting with them under the same roof. He's acknowledging the fact that quite a lot of the homeless population identify as LGBT, and because we know that that's nothing wrong with being LGBT, that's not a symptom of a deeper problem. No, that's because their parents have kicked them out of home. A study by America's William Institute shows that 40% of all young people experiencing homelessness identify as lesbian, bisexual, gay, or transgender. It raises the uncomfortable question, should parents' wishes for their kids take priority when those wishes compromise that kid's well-being? We know what that kid's well-being is, and when parents don't agree, should their wishes take priority? Well, the current Labour Party platform says that they shouldn't. Labour accepts the scientific evidence, I'd like to see that, purporting to change people's sexual orientation or gender identity are both false and harmful, and does not accept that such claims should continue to be made or, worse, acted upon. Those who make these claims prey upon those vulnerable to the anti-LGBT prejudices of the circles in which they and their families move. So heteronormative people are preying on queer people now. Current laws legislating false and misleading conduct in trade and commerce or professional misconduct in the health professions, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, it says Labor will ensure that it cooperates with states and territories to ensure that adequate laws and systems are put in place to ensure the protection of children, adolescents and others from the fake claims and psychological harms of so-called ex-gay therapies. They'll ensure that child protection authorities acknowledge attempts to cure same-sex attraction or gender-questioning children and young people as serious psychological abuse, and acknowledge that these harms, when suffered in the family, as domestic violence against the child. So what we saw prefaced in the New South Wales policy before is now acknowledged explicitly in the ALP platform. This is the one that they've agreed on at the moment. Now, they're going to vote on another one in December. They've changed it slightly. It's not quite so obvious what they're about. When you've seen where they're coming from, you can understand very clearly where they're going. Labor opposes the practice of so-called conversion and reparative therapies on LGBTIQ+ people and seek to criminalise these practices. Parents have a right to choose non-government schooling. Non-government schools should be supported by public funding that reflects the need and is consistent with the creation of a diverse and inclusive society. Now, anyone who's keyed into the queer normative worldview knows that diversity and inclusion do not include diversity of opinion. And inclusivity means queer normativity. So I read these words and I'm a bit triggered. So that's exactly... So now non-government school funding will be contingent upon promulgating queer normativity. Children can become vulnerable when their needs are considered secondary to the priorities of their parents, like the religious views of their parents or carers, institutions, governments, cultural and economic interests. So all children, regardless of their background, should be valued, respected, and their needs and rights recognised. Okay, so that's where we're at the moment. If the ALP party vote on that, and I have to tell you, most Labor MPs don't know that that's in there. They go, oh, to the ACL, anecdotally. I've heard them say, look, we know you get all upset about the LGBT stuff, but it's so minimal. It's just fringe. What you need to celebrate is our economic policy and our, you know, hospitals and all of these other policies over here. But when I look at that, I think this is actually a fundamental attack on the family. And when you read the narratives of the advocates for queer normativity, they hate the family. The family is the engine room of gender and binary, you know, it cements binary ideas of biology, heterosexual attraction. If you get rid of the family, you've gone a long way to getting rid of heteronormativity. So they really don't want the family around. And this seems to me that here they have the instruments for bringing that about. So I'm going to leave you on a slightly hopeful note about all the terrible, you know, we're in a terrible place. But in the UK, there is the beginning of a pushback. I've got some resources on the next slide as well, in America as well, of parents who feel that the government has already taken over their children. And I have to tell you, I've been listening to some parents who are really disempowered by this. So what this says is any parent who doesn't affirm a transgender identity is transphobic. And what that means to a child listening to it is they hate transgender people more than they love you. Heartless thing to say. Heartless, but what it does is it divides the parents and the children, and I've been speaking to families that have already been affected by this. From the beginning of the Safe Schools program, the fallout is beginning to be visible here. In the UK, you see a class action mobilising because they want same-day hormones in the UK. The activists say, I want to be able to go to the doctor, say I'm transgender and get hormones on the same day. In Chile, they've made it illegal to resile from a transgender identity. So you can become transgender, you can't come back. It's illegal. And we're trying to silence everybody that says that that's a good idea if you do. Okay, so there is some hope. Parents collectively can do something about this. So just to equip you with more information, if you want to look into this further, I'm happy to answer questions, of course. We have information on our website and information on a YouTube channel, including a recent visit from Walt Heyer from America, who's had two sex change surgeries and is very well qualified to speak on why not to do it. And they can't say you don't know what you're talking about to him. He started a website called sexchangeregret.com and helps people coming out the other end of this sausage machine sort of repair their broken lives at the other end. And there's another website from America called Fourth Wave Now, which is gender critical. So there is a narrative emerging. It's a new narrative. We need to build that up. But there are reasons completely consistent with logic for questioning the queer normative narrative. If you wanted to submit to the ARPA, you know, the changes, you don't have to be a doctor to question that. And there's an email address there. There's more information about that on the ACL website. ACL has a petition to the ALP party because what we don't want is for the ALP to be elected with this as part of their policy. We want them to step back from this before the next general election. And the Australian Family Association also has a tour. He's coming to Melbourne on the 15th of August of Dr. Van Meter, who is an endocrinologist who was working with John Money, who was the first man to begin sex change surgery. And he's a critic of the whole thing, but he's also very interestingly revealing how the transgender standards of care have come to be regarded as good medicine when they're not based on science at all. So if you want more information on that, I just thought I'd flag that as well. So thank you very much for listening to me. I'm sorry it's so depressing. The good news is that God's in charge and he loves humanity and he won't let his creation be destroyed. It's just how many lives have to suffer between now and when the madness clears. Thank you very much for listening.